Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I am Andrew Horowitz, and man, do I have stuff to talk to you about today.
Yeah, that's what you've been saying.
Mm-hmm.
What?
It's for me to know and you to find out.
Well, anyway, let's first introduce the show. It's 8:13 to 2013, and here we are to discuss the last 7 days in the world of the market.
Yeah, there's been a lot of things that have been happening. You know, last week and the week before were kind of, I thought, kind of, well, boring in a way that there really wasn't a lot of news. But that's, I guess you expect that in the summer, right?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, nothing really major in the market. Yeah, you know, the end of the earnings season, not much in the area of, you know, any economics that were really interesting. Politicians are kind of out. So, but now we got some things that are happening in the outskirts that look like they're pretty interesting. So let's start off with the big men with big mouths.
That would be the Fed or the or the president?
No. No politicians involved here. It's actually a little bit worse than it's...
Carl Icahn.
Yeah.
I knew I'd guess it eventually.
Yep. You know, it's kind of amazing. We've entered into a time when we've entered a time that the Fed is now, quote unquote, rock stars, right? Everybody knows who they are, and everybody knows about what, you know, all the different people versus being in a closet somewhere, in an office somewhere, and they just make decisions and who knows. Now we've entered into the rock star who is the hedge fund manager. And particularly the activists. Now, we know a few of the names. We know, like, an Einhorn, you know, David Tepper, maybe you know. You know, clearly, Warren Buffett, who is not really a hedge fund, but still, you know, an owner. You know, the Steve Jobs, the big guys from the CEOs. He's obviously passed, but all the different people, right? So now we have Carl Icahn, who, man, he's you know, trying to kick it up all over the place. So one of the things that he did today was he put out his first tweet ever.
Yeah.
And the tweet was kind of one of the tweets that was heard around the world. It was about his position and a statement about Apple. Now, you have to back up because for the last few weeks he's been talking about that he's going to be coming out with a tweet or be on Twitter. And he's been this big workup about, you know, he's going elephant hunting and, you know, looking for some big deals and all this. So it seems that he is now the owner and possesses about $1.5 billion worth of Apple. He says it's very undervalued. And he also said that he talked with Cook and they're talking about a repurchase plan and trying to boost that and maybe boosting the dividend. All I can tell you is that Apple was just kind of hanging out all day and then all of a sudden it started moving very quickly. And it was up about, I think, 5.6% at one point. That's pretty impressive for Apple without a very large short interest on it. And the fact that it is such a major stock that it's not a thinly traded stock. Mm. And it moved dramatically, which then carried the rest of the market, and particularly the NASDAQ, up with it. So pretty interesting that he's been – now he buys Apple and he's also buying Dell, or wants to buy Dell, which maybe he wants to merge them. I don't know. You know, and
that would be funny.
A disaster.
So here's the thing. Here's what I mm-hmm. think. This is more important. This guy set a bad precedent.
Who? Icahn?
Yeah, he goes on Twitter.
Yeah.
Says something casually. The stock goes up a lot, considering, you know, how high it is. And then I think every other hedge fund guy, every other takeover artist, every other kind of douchebag out there is going to say, hey, this looks like you could have some fun with this.
Yeah. You know, there was something interesting. The reason why he can do this. Now, let's kind of back this up all the way back to Reed Hastings coming out with an announcement on Facebook about Netflix. Remember that? Where he said that
right.
we have X amount of viewers or viewership or downloads or whatever it was, right? So there was a lawsuit or an investigation into this and whether or not there's going to be some sanctions that he released non-public information. And there was a big hoo-ha about, okay, well, what is public information?
Well, apparently with Twitter's massive following, mm-hmm. this mm-hmm. constitutes a public announcement.
Right. Well, in theory, if you think about it, so You could say, well, putting something in the Wall Street Journal or on CNBC is a public announcement because, well, it's readily available. People watch it. But not everybody gets the Wall Street Journal. What if somebody gets the Washington Post or New York Times, let's say? So it's not who it's available to, because Twitter's available to basically everybody. Facebook's available to everybody. It's just you choose not to use it maybe, or you use something different. So it's not that. Therefore, the court case that went on, or whatever the investigation that went on with Reed Hastings, that was deemed okay, now moves into the Twitterverse, if that's a word.
It is actually. Well, it's not a genuine word, but it will be.
Yeah.
It's pretty obvious.
So he does this. Yeah, I agree with you. You know, why not do this? And then you have the master of the pump and dump going to be able to do this. But the question is, you know, at what level do we get that this is an acceptable and truly a public announcement versus, like you're saying, that anybody could just try to pump their stock up?
It just is going to institutionalize pump and dump. I mean, I always thought pump and dump was a sketchy thing, but these guys were such sleaze balls. The guys who did pump and dump, you know, they're usually a mobbed up operation of some sort. And they, you know, they call a bunch of people up and get them to buy the stock, and then they're unloading it. If somebody's more legitimate,
right.
You know, a real guy like Icahn, he's not like a guy in a back room with a boiler room operation running. If he uses this to do pump and dump, I mean, essentially, that's what, I mean, these guys who, like, who's the guy that just got out of all the, or was it, it wasn't Icahn, some other guy got out of all the Yahoo stock and completely left the whole operation, took his board members and walked? One of these guys.
Yahoo?
I think it was Yahoo. Yeah. Anyway, Yahoo? Whatever.
Okay. I know who that was. I know. All right, he'll come to me in a second.
Yeah, that guy. So let's say Icahn goes into a company to run the stock up so he can sell the stock and make money. Isn't that what he's trying to do?
Yeah, Dan Loeb. But you know what? Dan Loeb. You wouldn't do that, I don't think, with – why would you do it pump and dump on Apple, for God's sake?
No, I'm not saying that. I don't think he knew. I think he just said that casually. I don't think there was any intention. I think – but the results of it, he's got to take notice and say, wait a minute. What, you know, it's just like that thing. Who was it? One of these guys, P. Diddy, or one of these characters, these rappers, said, "I'm buying putting all my money into this crummy company," and everyone went in because they're fans, and so the stock went up. And did he get out? I would think he would have, but it's like let's take a look at Loeb. Loeb is pushing everything, doing everything he can to run the price of the stock up. What's the point? So he can get out. How's that different than pump and dump?
Yeah, I mean, and I guess the difference is you can see is the timing of it, whereas a pump and dump is kind of like bring it up and then, you know, kind of crack it right, in 3 days or whatever. I don't think Icahn has that kind of time frame, obviously, because he has public disclosure requirements. This whole thing with the hedge fund guys is getting really out of hand. It's becoming really, truly almost like a daytime soap opera. Can I tell you some more? This guy Ackman, who you know well about, and this is the one that is the guy who went against Herbalife, which was, by the way, Icahn went against him. Now he's with JCPenney. You know, he was the guy that was all about Ron Johnson and all this, and, you know, talking about JCPenney as the next, you know, wow, and restructuring is amazing. So this guy, okay, who they're now calling, by the way, this is the vultures are circling, okay, because he got a wounded prey here. You got a wounded prey on JCPenney and on Herbalife, just to name two. They're calling him a frat boy prone to temper tantrums. Okay, so now all of a sudden this guy's getting a little bit of a bad rap. So he sends a letter to the JCPenney board, I think it was on Friday, saying, you know what, we got to replace this CEO, and he makes it public. Well, JCPenney board is horrified that, number one, that he's kind of airing dirty laundry, right? People are scratching their head going, wait a minute, this guy owns a ton of stock. Why is he kind of like, dissing on the current guy? And with earnings coming up very soon, I think they moved it a little bit to next week. I think it's next week. Why is he coming out with this then and kind of like, you know, trying to throw this guy into the bus and trying to make excuses? So there's this big hoo-ha that goes on, okay? And now, within 2 days, Ackman, who owns like 18% of the company, now resigns from the board of JCPenney.
Huh.
How bizarre is this?
It's pretty weird.
That's bizarre. You know?
What's he up to?
I don't know. You know, the question is he going to sell the shares? Why would he do that? Stock went down another 3% today. It was down like 6% yesterday. It was up like 5% or so on the original letter that, you know, that Ackman wants to replace this guy. That kind of somehow, which I don't know how it did, it was viewed as a good thing temporarily, at least, and that it was, you know, there, maybe there's some action happening. There's going to be somebody better put in. But man, this whole thing really stinks to high hell. And I don't blame the board for being pissed off, by the way. You know, going outside and really trying to, you know, really weakens the whole sentiment of the board. And you got this one guy or maybe two guys that are the outsiders that are just bitching and moaning about the board and all that. And, you know, it just the whole thing stinks.
Yeah. Well, I think with this thing with Icon and Twitter, I think this is, we're just seeing the tip of an outrageous iceberg.
Yep.
Because if I was one of these guys and I saw what happened with that with the Apple stock, just with the, you know, which shouldn't be moving at all that much because of some guy on Twitter just saying something.
Right.
Oh, I'm loading up. I'm going on Twitter. I'm going to get many followers, and I'm going to start doing stuff like that.
Well, I tweeted afterwards, and I said that
you did. Did you send it to Icon?
I should have probably included him in because I asked him, I mean, because of his power and all that, if he could please tweet that he wants peace on Earth. And I thought that maybe, you know what I'm saying? This could be just a revelation.
Yeah, I actually haven't started following him yet, but I think I might as well.
Yeah, I think he's kind of you should look him up.
It's like Carl underline Icon or something. This is dumb. He's got a dumb name.
Well, what should he have? Warren Buffett? Well, anyways, that's a name.
I should have Carl, all one word, Carl Icon or Icon or something, but with the underlines and these other complexities, it's not good.
Right. Yeah, Badass would be a good one for him. You know, Money Badass, something like that.
That would be good.
Yeah. So why are the markets going up recently? I know we saw last week was the first week in a while the markets were down. As a matter of fact, one of the worst weeks of the year, yet at the same time, we see Japan really kind of spark up again after they dropped. You know, Japan was up at 16,000, dropped to 13,000, kind of all of a sudden came up. Why did Japan go up last week, I was wondering? And here's the answer. Because their GDP was much worse than anticipated. That's true. This is true. Think about it. So your GDP comes in almost one point below expectations after all this money infusion. And initially, their market takes a real hit down on the news and then starts riding up and kind of comes back up. And then the next day, it's up 2% or whatever. Why? Well, if GDP is bad, that means potentially more active stimulus from the government.
This is the same thinking we're going through, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same, I mean, you've been observing this since it began.
Yeah, just
that if anybody thinks they're going to pull the plug on this QE stuff, the market wants to collapse. It's just, in fact, I believe that's probably the correct analysis, because I'll bet when they do pull it, the market will collapse.
Yeah, now they're talking about that the potential for it, they kind of, you know, depends on who's speaking, when they're speaking, what they're speaking, who they are. But, you know, the Fed guys, they're all contradictory. I think, by the way, this whole idea of transparency of the Fed and this communication tool that they have, whatever the hell that is, very bad idea. You know, there's certain things you need to keep a little quiet and just stop continually telling us different stories. It's very confusing after a while. And, you know, it doesn't mean that markets have to react, whatever. I just think it's a really bad tactic to take. Because, you know, if we see bad numbers, well, that's kind of good. Well, that's not good in the long haul to have that kind of an attitude. If we see good numbers, it's bad. Well, that's not good either to have that kind of attitude.
No, that's a very negative, long-term negative effect.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know, retail sales were up a mere 0.5% today. If you strip out the auto, which drove it down pretty significantly. But 0.5% everybody's kind of like all excited about. 0.5%. It's ridiculous. Give me a 3% increase. Give me a 1% increase. But 0.5%. So markets started down
today. That's a statistical rounding error.
Right, exactly. And especially with the way they do revisions. You know, we saw the markets again react pretty negatively today. The market was down about 10, 11 points. Then 11 o'clock came. See, it has nothing to do with the numbers anymore. It has to do with the time. That's how markets play these days. It's all about the time. The market, again, the second day in a row, took a big hit down and then started riding back up the rest of the day. And then, of course, in the afternoon, you had the Apple news, which obviously took everything up because Apple's a big part of these indices. But, you know, it is what it is. But what happened is today also that U.S. Treasuries were being hit pretty hard. In other words, yields were starting to move up. In fact, TBT, which is that 2x inverse of the long-term bond.
Right.
So when you know, it was up about 3% today, and it's been chugging along pretty well. I gave you a chart there. The yield on the 10-year is now 2.7%, almost reaching its recent highs that we've seen for some time back. But there's been a 66% increase in the yield, in the rate of the 10-year Treasury since May 1st. Now, about 65% of economists are saying that they think there'll be a slowing of QE, whatever that means, the tapering, the slowing, the whatever they want to call it.
This thing ran up a little bit here.
Yeah, see that? Pretty impressive, huh?
Yeah. That sounds like somebody like was delivering the money from the printer, and then they fell, and the money went flying, and more money came in. I don't know, just a lot of money came in.
Yeah, it's like the situation in Michigan where, you know, they're going through this bankruptcy and all, and somehow there's some check that came in for like $1 million that they can't find.
Oh.
It's just lost. It's somewhere. I just can't find it. Which I guess gives us the story about what's going on there. But yeah, I mean, the thing is that there's this whole economic cheerleading session, which is going on. And, you know, with the numbers being just so, and I'm going to get to in a moment. We'll talk a little bit later. I gave a list of the valuations and of stock markets around the world. Some of the ones that are the highest in terms of relative valuation with PE, you know, multiple of earnings, and some of the lowest. It's kind of interesting.
Where's this?
It's sort of at the bottom of my list here somewhere. I'll tell you right now. So the Russell 2000, that's the small caps. That's the, you know, smaller stocks of the you have what's called the Russell 3000. Now, inside the Russell 3000 is 3,000 stocks. And of those, one-third, the top largest, one-third is considered the Russell 1000. Okay, the largest in market cap. The lower two-thirds is the Russell 2000. So they trade like different indices. There's also the S&P 500, the S&P 600, the S&P 400, for example. When you put that together, you have the S&P 1500, right? You've heard of that, the S&P 1500?
Nope.
The S&P 1500 is a broad base. See, the S&P 500 is a large cap index. The S&P 400 is a mid-cap index, mid-capitalization. And the S&P 600 is a small cap index. So when you put those together, 600, 400, 500, you get 1,500. 1,500 is, we use this quite often, is a very good balance of U.S. equities, broad-based, sector diversified, as well as market cap differentiated. So you can see actually what's going on in the markets versus like a Dow 30 is just 30 stocks. Is that really representative of all the stocks out there? No. But people use it anyway. S&P 500 is a representative. It's better, but I'd rather use like the 1500. Then you got the Wilshire 5000, which is a whole too many stocks to deal with. So the Russell 3000 is a very key index that a lot of money managers use. And the 1000, again, is very similar to the 500, the S&P 500. But the 2000 is a smaller caps. The 2000 has a PE multiple of 39. So in other words, that they're trading at 30 times earnings.
39, yeah.
39 times earnings. That is significant. They usually trade higher, they you know, comparatively. But that is a significant number, meaning that people are really willing to pay up for the opportunity that these companies will really outperform in the future.
Yeah, especially in this dead economy. That's what I call optimism.
Yeah. Now, with low rates, these companies can do well. Can they do better than large caps? Well, that's unclear. But still, with low rates, that's very beneficial to them. And so they're trading, you know, at this 39 PE. So let's say that's probably about 25 to 30% north of the longer term average. Now, they did have a very good period to period increase in their earnings and all that. But still,
what's this historically?
It would somewhere be in the 24s. Now, the S&P 500 is trading at 16.3, historically around the 15s. Now, depending on who you talk to, there's going to be people that say, well, it's well-priced. You know, it's been as high as 20-something. We're not talking about in the years that were aberrations, okay? You know, back in the, you know, 1999, 2000, or some of these other years, or 2007. You know, we're talking about normalized levels of earnings that are growing, but maybe not growing that quickly. You don't really pay up for that. So they're trading at 16.3, which is pretty pricey as well. not as pricey as a small cap, but it's pricey. The transports, the Dow Jones transports, trading at 19. That's pretty pricey for a transportation stock.
Yeah.
Okay. The Nikkei, which was trading, you know, if you think about the Nikkei for a second, the Nikkei, in terms of their earnings, I mean, they were having a lot of trouble. And, you know, they really ramped up their earnings significantly because they dropped the currency so low. But it's still trading at a 23, which I think is extremely high. Spain is at 69.
I think that's extremely high.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. So Spain is just being dragged along. You know, they have an incredibly high unemployment rate. They have all sorts of trouble in their banks still. Really, nothing's been cured. There's been just a gigantic Band-Aid gauze pad put on there. You know, they have still a real estate issue, but them and Portugal. And really just, you know, they're just being dragged along because they're part of the puzzle, you know, part of the whole European area. Now, on the lower end, we have Hong Kong at 10.5, which is pretty good. Considering, I think that's a pretty good, you know, reasonable number. They really have lagged in terms of returns this year. The China's Shanghai is 11.3, Korea is at 12, and the Russian MI6 is at 6.3. Now, some of that is, well, a lot of that is due to the fact that commodity prices have collapsed in a lot of the things that they really participate in, aside from oil.
Yeah.
Although their oil did come down in value a lot. So, you know, it's not just the Brent. It's also they're the Brent, and there's the WTI that we have over here. So they're dealing with Brent, and those prices have come down significantly. So if you look at the valuations around the world, it seems to me that, you know, you got to be looking at these small caps with a kind of a questionable eye, and wondering how much more this can go, and how much more, you know, as you said, the optimism can carry the PEs and stretch the PE ratios so much, you know, to a level that still makes it reasonable to invest in.
Doesn't sound reasonable at all.
Yeah, I mean, the S&P, you can go back and forth and all, but you know what will happen is you have what's called, I think we talked about this last week. We have the earnings expansion, earnings multiple expansion, and the S&P probably, because of the large cap nature of it, the dividends and all that. You know, I'll give it that it can have a little bit of a higher at any given time, you know, within a reasonable amount, higher earnings multiple. Same thing with small caps. But again, this one is really out of whack. So I'm going to watch that.
Well, just the rule is the price earnings is supposed to reflect the yearly growth. So if it's 100, your company is expected to grow 100% per year.
Well, no, it's how much people are willing to pay.
Well, that's what it amounts to, but isn't it supposed to reflect growth?
Potential growth. It may not be 100% this year, but what the thought is that the company will grow into their ratio. So if you have 100 and it's way out of whack, well, people are saying, okay, well, we think that earnings are really going to ramp up dramatically. And as such, we're willing to pay up now, because if we pay up now, what's going to happen is earnings are going to come up and, you know, the multiple will come down. But still, it's going to be a movement up of the stock price over time, because they're continuing to make decent, you know, have decent growth.
Right.
And this, the peg ratio is another thing we talk about. You know,
I have a parallel about, I don't know if this applies, but wine futures. Mm-hmm. The idea is you buy the wine cheap. As a future, and then it appreciates almost the day you get it. Mm-hmm. And what happens is that this works for a while, and then people start to cheat it, thinking, well, this wine is going to be worth $400, and so they sell it out of the chute. There's wines right now that came out at $40, and then they went up to like $400.
Wow. And what period of time?
Within a decade.
Wow.
And then there's wine. And then any wine that did that, the next time it comes out at 200. And then it comes out at 400 before you know it. And then now the wine, it comes out. Typically now, any wine that comes out from some of these more recent vintages, and Bordeaux is what we're talking about mostly, they may come out at, let's say, $300 a bottle. 10 years from now, they'll be selling for $300 a bottle. Nothing. It didn't do anything. It was hopeless.
Beanie Babies.
Beanie Babies. Beanie Babies are never worth anything in the first place. That's the real scam.
Well, they had collectible value.
Yeah.
I was at a Chicago All-Star game in whatever year that was when Beanie Babies were really hot. And at the game, they gave you a All-Star game Beanie Baby. So you're only getting one of these, right? There's only going to be one of these made for this year and forever. I walked outside. People offered me $200.
And you sold it wisely.
I don't want to talk about it.
Uh-huh.
Yep. I was thinking about selling it, but the gent I was with said, don't sell it. They're going to be worth so much.
No.
I said, come on, really? Anyway, if anybody wants Beanie Babies, I got two of them available. I'll sell it to you for $1. I have so much stuff in a closet somewhere. They're red, white, and blue with stars and have the – I think they're worth probably $200. So, yeah, I'll sell them for $150 a piece. How's that?
Yeah, sure.
I thought we would talk about Tesla for a second.
First of all,
Elon Musk came out with his Hyperloop this week, his idea of a Hyperloop.
Yeah, if anybody wants to know what it's really all about, just go to the website or go to the wiki page for a company called ET3.
Yeah, this is the one you said had the original idea way back.
No, he's still working on it. I mean, this idea is almost ready to roll out. I don't know if it's going to be successful, and I have my reasons for thinking that. I have talked to the CEO of that company, talked to some other people, and I know that Elon Musk met with him like a week before he made his announcement, and they were expecting, of course, to get a little publicity out of Elon. But instead, he just made up this dog and pony story that he rolled out, which is...
He's got a little drawing that he did on a piece of paper.
He had somebody do a drawing, yeah.
Yeah, and basically this is his next idea that, you know, he's hoping to have some significant potential with. And if nothing else, it would be an amazing – if there is this idea that does come to fruition, it would be an amazing construction job.
Yeah, it would be. And it'd still be cheaper than the – so I contacted my people in the Colorado area that were at the meeting with Musk. And he said that, you know, it was kind of a didn't go off the way they'd hoped. But if nothing else, he believes that the California high speed rail initiative may have been queered by Musk. And that would be a good thing, especially for Californians, believe me.
Interesting.
That's like a $60 million fiasco. I mean, essentially, it's a high-speed rail between Fresno and Bakersfield at 60 miles an hour or something like that. It's just,
well, that's a far cry from the 800 miles an hour.
Yeah, this other thing, apparently, it's like a evacuated tube. It's not a vacuum, but it's evacuated, so it's not much air in there. And because you can't have a thing pushing air. And... you can get up to pretty high speeds. My problem with it, if you look at the ET3 stuff, which is easy to, there's a good website showing pictures and diagrams and plans. My problem is that I think it's a sociological barrier that's unsolvable.
Why?
I don't think anybody wants to get in a tube. It's passengers, I think, is between maybe 6 to 8 people, maybe.
They're talking about 25.
Yeah, well, you could probably make something bigger, but then you have to deal with the curves. But anyway, and there's also supposed to be one that carries cars. But whatever the case is, you're still in the tube. And there has not been any design I've seen, unless Musk is making one up, that has a bathroom. And you're in a closed tube, and you're being shot at 800-900 miles an hour down this thing, and you have to be in there for a half an hour to get to L.A. I don't think people are going to like that. I mean, it's just got to be strippers inside the thing or something. Entertainment.
All right. Well, now you're talking here. There's something different. Entertainment. What happens if you're halfway in between, a quarter away, whatever it is, and I don't know what happens. Something happens, and nothing bad, but it stops.
Yeah.
The car just stops.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Well,
is there an exit somehow in the middle of somewhere?
Well, that's another question. I don't know. I'm sure they have an answer for that question. I don't work there. I don't know what it is. But there's probably some way of getting out, I'm sure. Or maybe there's little side things. They just put you, I don't know, shunt you over to the side. I don't know. I have no idea.
Interesting. Well, I thought I'd talk to you about Tesla a little bit. I found some very interesting things that I want to share with you. Okay? Now, we know that Tesla shot up after the earnings last week. Remember that?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I think I was long or short or something.
I think you were out before that. You were out like the day you got it.
Oh, yeah, it didn't help. Okay, right. It would have just been worse.
Now, Tesla came in, and they came in with a surprise beat of earnings, if you recall. A significant beat, like 20 cents to the upside when they thought they were going to lose, I don't know, 10 cents to the downside. Okay, something like that, right? Now, what's interesting about this is how they came up to this number. Now, I'm going to take you through this very, give you a couple details, and I'm just going to give you the overview so you understand. First of all, here's what happened. So looking back to June of 2012, that quarter they came out, they lost about $105 million in terms of dollars, and they had some stock-based compensation that was added back in because that's the way they're doing their accounting, especially what Musk gets. They put it on the books as a positive and, you know, kind of take it off the other side. There was a couple of little things there, but basically they lost about $93 million that quarter. Now, move forward to the March 13th, 2013. They made about $15 million, but there was a couple of things in there. There was a change in fair value of the warrant liabilities, about $10 million they took down of that. And they added back a net income, including the lease accounting, and that added back. So you got this kind of positive number, also would have been flat. Now, here's the thing. This quarter, they have a net loss of $30 million, okay? They add back in $19 million for stock-based compensation expense. There's a couple other things, but then they add back another $16 million in change for the early extinguishment of the Department of Energy loans because they got these special loans and all that. So they paid them off early with the money that they got from, I assume, their they sold shares to the public. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Secondaries. So that's $16 million. Then there's another $6 million or close to $7 million that was added back because of this lease accounting. And then there was another $19 million that was added back because of the Model S gross profit deferred due to lease accounting. So what they did was they took the leases that they're going to, you know, they have that are, let's say, a 4-year lease, for example. And usually you would have that over maybe 4 years. You take a piece of the profit each year of that, right? They brought it all forward.
Mm.
Okay, this is the first time they did that. So what you have was from a $30 million loss net income. So in other words, your income minus the cost to do business and all this stuff, you have a loss of $30 million. Then you add back in all this other chazarai, and you get a $26 million gain. Now, of that, two of the components, clearly the early extinguishment of the Department of Energy loans, because they got some benefit of that, that's not going to happen again. That's a one time, right?
Yeah.
So that's $16 million right there, all right? Stock-based compensation, fine. We'll just, you know, that's how they're accounting for it. That's what it is. It's constant. I don't have a problem with that. But this other thing where they brought forward the $19 million, you got to say, that's interesting. You know, how much are they going to do that per year, per quarter? And, you know, is that a one-shot deal? So out of the two of those 2 points right there, you're talking about $35 million. That was added back in. So this marvelous beat that they had was really from accounting.
Yeah, creative accounting.
Yeah. So I am scratching my head about this, you know, thinking, you know, so what is the big hoop you do and why are people getting all, you know, crazy about this, buying into this stock as they have? So, you know, we kind of put a short on it yesterday.
Hmm.
Obviously, we'll have a tight stop on it. But, you know, so far in the money, it was down about 2% today. It was down at one point about, I think it was it like 5% yesterday or something like that? And then it came back to only about 2% down or something like that. But I just would look at this and question, you know, how long it's going to take.
Before somebody to add two and two?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Exactly. Maybe Carl Icahn will tweet it. I don't know.
Huh. Interesting.
But keep that as a point of interest on Tesla. Let's see. China is shunning the kernel. Same store sales dropping 13% in July. Estimates were for about 7% drop. They're still having big problems over there because people are not willing to eat chicken, afraid of any kind of bird flu of any sort. And this has been a continuing problem for I don't even know how long at this point. But yet they keep on coming back. And when after the numbers come out and, you know, they're not so good, they take the stock down. They took the stock down 2%. Big deal. That's a big same store sales drop in China, which is, you know, a really major part of their revenue stream. So that's kind of I find it interesting. But for whatever reason, people just love this stock and they keep on bidding it up no matter what.
Interesting.
Now, BlackBerry came out with some news. You remember I told you, I think I've told you this, that there's a couple of words you always have to watch for, right? And they came out with some news and they announced that they're pursuing all measures and strategic alternatives.
Well, at least they're not using the word pivot.
Oh, yeah, no. That would be something. So they're coming out with that, and the stock climbs 10%.
Yeah.
That'll be 10%.
Nothing like a good old buzzword.
Yeah. I'm telling you, I think that the high-frequency trading and the algo traders have that word somehow linked to their programs. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, you've said this before.
Yeah.
You believe that they're scanning. Oh, buy.
I think it's automatic.
Push the button.
It's automatic. It happens so fast. I'm not kidding.
No, it's
They can scan the news. We can scan the news if we want to. Yeah. How hard is that? Mm-hmm. You put certain words in. If this is a word and, you know, it's on this stock, let's say, you know, maybe you do some manual entry of certain stocks in there and then you, you know, you put that in and say, hey, buy it. You know, at least pick it up. And then what happens is, you know, if it starts moving, build into it. If it doesn't, get out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here, I think this is probably something you follow. The bonehead move of the week, month. This guy, the CEO of AOL, this guy Armstrong.
Yeah.
Did you follow this at all?
A little bit.
So he fires an employee while discussing these radical changes. He has this big meeting that they're going to do this whole big change to their patch, which is their local news deal at AOL.
Yeah.
And they have all these like little bitty sites.
Are they
all
losing
over the place?
Money on this? I mean, it's just a bunch of micro sites. They must be managing it wrong. I think you could do this whole thing without losing money. I mean, it's just, I mean, it's not the server costs can't be killing them. And what, they got one editor and that's it? It's a it's just a blogger. It's a blogger from some local area.
Right. But for whatever reason, I guess they're losing money on it. Something's going on. And they want to slash some of the employees, et cetera, from this division, we'll call it. Okay. So as he's talking about this, and he all of a sudden he blurts out this, he sounded really like revved up and kind of, you know, coffeeed up or something. I don't know, caffeined up. He says, "Abel, put down the camera right now. Abel, you're fired. Out." Fires the guy right in front of everybody. Like, what happened there? I guess he wasn't paying attention. He says something right before that to the effect of, you know, "You think this is a joke? You think what we're doing?" I don't know why he said that, and if it was referring to somebody in particular or just generally saying, "Hey, this is not a joke." Maybe. This guy's name, by the way, he's a creative director for some division or something. You know, his name is Abel Lenz.
Yeah.
How great is that for a photographer?
Oh, yeah. It sounds like, or a photography company.
Right. Abel Lenz. Abel, put down that camera.
Maybe Armstrong's bipolar. I mean, this seemed like a bipolar thing.
This, and then he's out, and of course he's out the next day apologizing.
Yeah, that's what bipolars do that.
This is very weird. Very, very weird.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Okay, so now listen, last week, the coal stocks, the steel stocks, many of the material stocks have been absolutely on fire. The gold stocks have been just off the hook. Okay? Why? Well, last Wednesday, China came out with some kind of industrial, I think I mentioned this, industrial profit numbers that looked better and all that. One data point out of the vast number of others that looked terrible, okay? And everybody said, well, China's on the way back. China's going to start producing and manufacturing again, and man, let's start moving this stuff up, you know? And also, you know, we're this far into this whole debacle with everything that's going on around the world, and maybe, you know, these companies that haven't gone out of business, like U.S. Steel and, you know, Cliffs Natural, which is, you know, coal and metallurgical coal and just name all the, you know, Walter Energy and just all these companies, maybe they're not going to go out of business and maybe we should buy these things. These things ramped. I mean, ramped. We had actually on an alert that we put out with Trigger Point Research, we had Cliffs about 4 days or 5 days prior to this all happening. And, you know, in, within a period of, I don't know, 8 or 9 days, we made 11%. And it hit our target. And then it just blew out from there another 10% on the upside. So these stocks have been going a little bit crazy. Now, here's what's interesting. China last month said that they're going to cut excess capacity. And they're going to make sure that there's no, the stockpiling at the level they were doing. And they're going to try to cool things off because they have too much going on and too much they're bringing in. And it's not necessary for the level of their economy. So I guess people just ignored that point from 2 weeks ago. And then again tonight, they're out saying that China is going to push ahead with their efforts to cull the excess industrial capacity a year earlier than planned. And will promote spending on information products to stabilize growth. I don't know what that's going to do in the next week or so with these material stocks. Maybe nobody cares.
No, maybe they don't.
Maybe.
Oil's at 106.
Amazing.
Gold's back up to 1320. Huh.
Yep. Yeah, it slipped pretty hard last week, and then it just ramped. There was one day, I think it was $27 or something like that a couple days ago, and silver just rocketed. You know, it's like anything else. This market is all about what got crushed and then just buy it.
Well, if the Chinese were actually thinking of ramping up, even though I don't believe that's true, this will kill it. It's kind of the irony of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm, exactly. You know, I found this I couldn't believe this when I read this, actually. The interest rate on personal loans in Brazil, any ideas how much that is? The percent?
Well, you know, the Brazilians were used to this ridiculous hyperinflation some years back. When I first went there, was a moment in history where there was hyperinflation. I still have a $600 million or a $600 million Cruzeiros bill that I keep around, which was worth like $20 the day I got it, and it was worth like 19 like at the end of the day, and then 18, and it was astonishing. So things like that can happen in Brazil, and because it's just weird, but it's true.
Well, here's the number. The average rate on standard personal loans was 73% in June.
Oh, that's pretty high.
Hi, I'd like to take out a $10,000 loan. Sure, no problem. Bring back the $10,000 plus $7,300 at the end of the year. And now they have, and that was compared to about 66% a year ago. Now they have this new thing that everybody's flocking to because it's such a great rate. It is really a whole different thing. You get the payroll deductible loan. So now I guess they're doing this because they figured that if it's a payroll deductible loan, you know, you're going to have at least an end to their paycheck, right? And you have the ability to pull from their paycheck. There's a little bit more stability. People aren't going to run and all that. A mere 24%.
Yeah, it sounds like the Jimmy Carter era in the late 70s.
Yeah, 24%. How do people even – I guess they don't borrow is the point, right?
It definitely discourages it.
A new law coming out is going to – now, hold on to your seat. This is going to be something that, you know, you're going to say,
can I put my money in a Brazilian bank and expect to get something like 50% interest?
You'll get a decent amount, much better than here, yeah, if the bank stays in business, sir.
Because there's a couple of good banks. I have a lot of friends in Brazil. I can ask them, what is the bank to put your money in Brazil that's going to stay? There's a couple. They do go out of business, though.
They have a bunch of Spanish banks there, too. Yeah. You know, Santander and all those guys. So it seems that there's going to be an update to the rule. You know, for a while there was no securitized loans being issued. Remember, that was the big problem, that they would take all these different deals and back it with housing and throw it into a pile and call it a AAA deal and just sell it. So all these little pieces were put into this giant bucket and then wrapped up and then sold to the public as securitized debt. You can do that with credit cards. You could do that with personal loans like for cars and all that. You could do that for houses. Well, for a while, all the financial institution said, you know what, we're going to step back from this for a little while. It didn't feel so good when the thing went down. Okay. Well, of course, that changed and everybody's back into it again. But there's a rule that says that if you're going to offer these securitized loans and you're going to package this, you're going to have a stake in the deal. Therefore saying, hey, you know what, you're not going to want this thing to go sour and you're not going to misprice it, etc. That's the theory, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
New rule coming out. It's going to lessen the requirement of what the banks have to put up inside of that deal, how much skin they're going to have to put into the game.
Skin.
Yep.
What does that even mean?
What do you mean? Skin?
That's one of my, it's on my list of buzzwords I'm on the lookout for.
Oh, yeah.
Skin in the game.
Skin in the game.
Yeah.
You know, a piece of flesh.
They have to have an investment? Is that what that means?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Why don't they just say, why don't you say investment?
Investment. They have to have an investment. Oh, okay. They have to have an investment, not skin. Skin is, you know, a human part. They can't do that. That would be terrible. So they're going to require less investment.
Less skin in the game?
Less skin in the game. Some people say that, yeah.
Huh.
What about the golf, the skins game?
Yeah, I know. That's what always confuses me.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of funny. All right, question of the day. You ready? John C. Dvorak, a man that knows everything.
Okay.
What is one with the following zeros after it in terms of a number? So tell me what this number is. Okay, so for example, one with three zeros is 1,000, right? You with me?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so it's one with 15 zeros after it. What is that number?
Okay, so one with six would be 1,000,000 and nine would be 1,000,000,000. Although there's 1,000,000,000,000 in, I think, Great Britain, and I don't think 1,000,000,000 gets to what we call 1,000,000,000,000. So there's we have a nomenclature issue here right away. So you have $1,000 trillion is what you're asking for. What does that mean? What is $1,000 trillion? Would it be, let's see, there'd be a trillion, I'm trying to look at it the other way. A quadrillion? Would it be a quadrillion?
Yes, it is. Ding, 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 ding. Okay. Yes, it's a quadrillion.
Okay.
And what is something that is a quadrillion? That just became a quadrillion. Any thoughts? Anything? Anything? Anything?
There's 1,000,000 good jokes here.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll because I'm not rehearsing them, I'd probably be offensive. No, what?
Japan's debt in yen.
Oh, oh, cool.
Hit a quadrillion yen on over the weekend.
Huh.
I thought that was pretty cool. You know, good for them. I mean, listen, everybody wants a record here and there, right? So they get into the
Guinness book.
Yep, Guinness Book of Debt. So they were at a quadrillion yen. So now they're talking about possibly raising taxes, and they're talking about raising corporate taxes.
Oh, that'll just sink the economy. Great.
Well, they talked about taxing the, you know, who knows? It went up because they figured they're not going to do it. So there you go.
Huh.
I don't know. Two more quickies, and then we'll get to maybe the stocks. Unless you have something. One thing. Airlines, it seems that the merger between, you see this whole thing with American? There's some antitrust issues.
What are the latest mergers? Is U.S. Air is getting together with somebody? Was that American?
American.
Two crummy airlines merging. That's fantastic. Yeah. Why would they want to stop that?
Well, they seem there's going to be some, you know, that now they'll be able to charge anything they want, and there's antitrust and all this stuff. Anyway, the airline stocks got pretty much whacked.
I know how to solve all these ish problems.
What is that?
Let foreign carriers compete in the U.S. market.
Oh, Thai Airlines. I would love to fly them.
Oh, Singapore Airlines flying San Francisco to New York or Cathay Pacific. I'd be all over it.
Oh, yeah. That was a good one. Yep. Those would be good. I mean, there's a totally different – I've told you about this, but, you know, I've flown those. And there is a – it's not even the same. It's not even being it's a totally different universe.
Yeah.
That, you know, I flew over on United for a long haul recently, and I was like – I told you, I got hysterical. I got absolutely – like – just hysterical that they didn't have a toothbrush to give me.
Oh yeah, no, I used to when I took I would take a red eye, and then you'd always get they used to have these red eye packs, which would be a toothbrush, even though the toothbrush will rip your gums to death, is not a very good one. But they'd have a shaver pack. They'd have a shaver and some foam and all these different little amenities. We're talking about in business class. And or even for first, if they had first, and first is going away domestically, it seems to me. But now you ask them for, oh, yeah, yeah, we used to do that. We used to have the little shaver. Right. As if the two guys care, you know, that ask for the shaver, so they can't afford that. You know, no, there's no shavers.
Right. So I guess I got so hysterical on this flight that the flight attendant gave me hers. She had one that wasn't used. I said, well, what's this? How'd you find this? I had one. I had one.
Yep. I won't tell you where I got it.
Exactly. The final thing is the U.S. is preparing, again, another head spinner, but the U.S. is preparing to file criminal charges against two former J.P. Morgan traders for that whole big, you know, whale trade thing that went on. Remember that?
Yeah. What did they do? What did they do that was a crime?
Well, they went over the allowed amount and hid the risk and, you know, all sorts of things that were against company policy. And obviously, criminally, it was essentially stealing money. I mean, it's what they were doing, right? They kept on going over the amount that was allowed, and they were playing with accounts, amounts that they shouldn't have. And it's just, you know, whatever the charges are going to be, it's, you know, it's.
What about that other company? The one that was mixing the, you know, your.
MF Global?
Yeah, MF Global, mixing the accounts up. How come nobody's going to jail from them?
I don't know, but here's the best part of this.
Corzine.
The best part of this is, but the officials have agreed not to prosecute the trader whose bets led to more than $6 billion of losses. Now, how does that work? So you get a filed charge against the two traders that were, but not the head trader? What? How does that work?
That doesn't work.
How does that?
Let's just throw in some. What are the two interns doing? Well, right. Tell them to get ready for 10 years in Leavenworth.
Right, exactly. We'll have jobs waiting for you when you get out. Don't worry. That's crazy. I mean, I don't even understand. It makes totally no sense. If they're going to charge people who are the traders, why do they charge the lead trader? So frustrating.
Yeah, well, this is like, you know, Abu Ghraib. You know, they find some stooges at the bottom of the pecking order, and they throw them in the slammer, and everyone else gets, you guys should have managed them better.
Right, exactly. All right, let's get to the stocks here. We got lots to talk about. And by the way, we didn't forget about the closest to the pin. That's coming. It's coming. It's coming. You're gonna know all about it when you're going to have a weekly contest for our listeners. And it's going to be whoever comes closest to the stock price. We're getting it all set up in the background, so that's coming. You'll hear about it shortly. But basically, going over this stock list that we have, which, by the way, is a game. It's not anything that we're recommending or soliciting or telling you that you should do. Obviously, this is something that if you're going to invest, do it on your own. Don't take this as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. You know, I was thinking about using the Adam Curry version of this that he did for me for one of my podcasts. You ever hear that one?
No.
Oh, yeah, he did one for me. And he's got that deep voice and the whole reverb thing going on and whatever he's got going on with that voice.
He's got the big sound. He's got a bunch of compressors and crazy gear. He's got a good voice anyway, but he maxes it out.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, do you ever see him in one of those movies? He's been in a couple of movies, right? Do you ever see him
only
in those
one?
Movies? Oh, well, that one. Yeah, that's the one.
That one.
I was looking at
that. Hi. Yeah. I can't act.
I was watching a little clip of that a couple of weeks back. I thought it was kind of funny. Anyway, so yeah, he did one for me, and it's kind of the same thing. Anyway, so it's not an offer to buy or sell any security, and any securities may be owned by myself, John, or Horowitz Company clients in our portfolios. But anyway, so this is a game, and you can check this out. Always look at the Google spreadsheet that we have linked at DH Unplugged. And of course, if you go to DH Unplugged, do not pass up the opportunity to get a copy of John's latest book. Awesome stuff. And it's called...
Inside Track 2013.
This is your cue. This is your cue.
Inside Track 2013. It's got a bunch.
Good.
Tech investors in particular should grab a copy and read it so they can get a kind of a clue about what the scene is like currently.
So it's Inside Track 2013.
Yeah.
Inside Track 2013.
Yeah, not Insight Track.
Right. So it's Inside Track 2013. Just making sure everybody gets that.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Let's talk about the continual movement of the – it's kind of like the companies that keep winning here on this list just keep on winning on this list. Live Nation, there's no stopping it. You know, there's a concert company. Just keeps on going up. 82% in less than a year. Corning is up 21%. Amazon, short, down 3.8%, which means it hasn't really moved very much.
At all.
The corn is continuing to just bleed. As a matter of fact – I think it was last week, Goldman Sachs came out with it's going to be sub-4 by the end of the year or something like that. You know, what happened with corn is really fascinating because we had this thing to shoot up to incredible levels when there was this terrible harvest, right, last year? Droughts and all this good stuff. And then what happens is, like things happen, the weather got into a totally different situation and plantings were much better. And plantings were much better because everybody was planting more and fertilizing more because they had this terrible harvest. And now you have this bumper crop. So prices are down. So we're up 24%. 24%. on shorting the Techram Corn Fund. Just kind of breezing through here. Here's something that's going to happen. Cree came out with earnings tonight. They actually beat by a penny, guided down slightly on their outlook. Shares are down about 13-14% after hours. Now, if all things go as planned, tomorrow morning it will open up and just go up about 22%. That's what's happening these days.
Do I get kicked out because of this? It's after hours that went under 10.
Not after hours. No, we're not doing after hours. It's only during the period. So you're going to see what happens on the open tomorrow. And if the open is less than, what are we saying here, 70, so 63 around?
Yeah.
You are out.
We'll see.
No, no, that's, I'm sorry. I'm the wrong stock. 75.
No, 70.
It'd be 7.5%, so 67 or so.
Yeah.
Just kind of cruising down the list. Las Vegas Sands not going anywhere. Clean Energy not going anywhere. JP Morgan still holding up nicely, 11.3. Acadia Pharmaceuticals. Pharmaceuticals have been on fire, just out of control. Up 45%. Questcor is now up 105%.
Yep, that's the big winner, and that's the short-term winner, too. That was the pick of the year.
Yeah, that one was a good one. And actually, I think, was it last year? Last year or the year before? I think last year that was the number one stock also. I mean, of all stocks.
Huh.
Now, look at this. You got the TBT in here, right? You got the TBT. And that's up 2.5%, 2.7%. Apollo Group, we picked up a couple of weeks back, up 10.7%. Freeport-McNamara, that goes right in with the discussion about the material stocks.
Yeah,
we talked about that, and it was starting to move, and it sure did, 31. I mean, this stock still at 31 is if you look at the long-term price history, it's still low. I mean, 34 is the number that I always look for Freeport to see where it's going and where it's been. So, you know, you still have a little bit of upside there potentially. Potash up 6%. JCPenney. Now, JCPenney we bought because we thought earnings were coming out, but I think they moved them or something. So we're still waiting on that. And we would have been up if it wasn't for today, which was stock was down, which actually was up 5. Yeah, we at the top, we were probably up about 4% or something like that. So we're, you know, we're right on the edge here. Hmm. Now, I have a stock. Tesla. You know I had to do that, right?
Tesla?
Yeah.
You're going to short it?
Yep.
Mm.
Inviting, isn't it?
I'm going to not short. I shorted it and got burned once.
Yeah, so.
And I'm going to...
If at first you don't succeed.
Maybe I'll short it next week.
Okay. Anything that you would like to add to this...
I've been looking around. I didn't see anything worthwhile. I think the list is getting too big.
It is getting big. We should figure a way to cull this a little bit because, you know, if it's on for a certain period of time or something, move it to a different section.
Yeah. Or retire them is like a Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I know. We'll think about what we should do there with that. I'll tell you, by the way, you see down on the bottom there, there's a – see that Unipixel? See that?
Yeah.
So they came out with earnings 2 days ago, I believe it was. And I think they thought it was a loss of – I think they was looking for about a loss of 20 cents. They actually came at a loss of like 40 cents. Stock was down about 8 or 9%, 10% in the after hours. Next day, it was down, down, down. At one point yesterday, it was up about 3%. And today, it was up about one point about 7%. So I guess everybody's thinking that the worst is over. Plus, they do some business with Apple. A lot of the suppliers. By the way, it wasn't just Apple that moved today because what was really fascinating was that on the tweet, Apple moved. But, you know, everything that was related to Apple moved. We earlier in the day put out an alert to buy Cirrus, C-R-U-S, and it was up like 5% by the end of the day because of this.
They're a big supplier of Apple. Apple's coming out with their iPhone X. We don't know what it is. It's going to be a 5S or a 5C or a 6 or a, who knows.
I hope they come with a 6. I can't stand the S thing going on.
Who knows? Yep. Whatever the case, they're going to bring out a new iPhone. And they do this in September because they've noticed that their big month is September. And so every September, Apple brings out their – that's when they bring out the products they really want to move. Because they just take – because September to the end of the year, they just rock. And so they're going to bring this thing out. Now, Larry Ellison came out and made some commentary. Somebody was pointing this out in a forum. That, you know, the company's dead. And they had no vision anymore. And now that Steve's gone, you know, I wouldn't be involved in this company if I, you know, he just trashed him for some apparent reason. I don't know why.
Really? When did he do this?
I don't know. Somebody was, I don't have the exact details, but it's something he said to somebody. But it was
something he said to somebody.
Yeah, but I'm just, all I got. I have to go get the email where the guy pointed this out to me. It's in a forum in Los Angeles that does a lot of discussions
about
this.
It's right here. 12 hours ago. Business Insider. Larry Ellison says Apple won't successful. Very bad headline, don't you think?
That's the Business Insider. They're not very well educated.
Yeah, Ellison says that Apple won't successful without Steve Jobs. That's what it says.
Yeah, I'm sure it does say that. It's unbelievable.
Apple won't be nearly as successful without Steve Jobs. He hinted that, let's see, this is the Business Insider. He says that, let me kind of cruise down here. There's a big picture of Larry Ellison in his famous, outfit. He says he touched on topics like NSA spying, that he also talked about his old friend Steve Jobs. CBS released a partial transcript of the interview, and he said that he hinted that he didn't think the Apple would do well without Steve Jobs. Now we have the full transcript and a bit more context. Ellison says he thinks that Jobs is irreplaceable, and Apple won't be nearly as successful as it's been now that Jobs is gone. I say it publicly, he's irreplaceable. I don't see how they will not nearly be so successful that he's gone. Charlie Rose, he was his best friend for 25 years.
Is that what Ellison said?
Yeah.
Well, they were neighbors, and I think they did get along as ascetics.
I mean, they were BFFs. I mean, seriously,
I doubt it. Hmm. But they were friends though, because they're.
He was our Edison, our Picasso. He was an incredible inventor. Well, we already know what happens to Steve without Apple. I'm just kind of reading what Ellison said back to Rose. We conducted the experiment. I mean, it's been done. We saw Apple with Steve Jobs. We saw Apple without Steve Jobs. We saw Apple with Steve Jobs. Now we're going to see Apple without Steve Jobs.
We saw Apple with Steve Jobs to begin with, and it was at the time they were having this big beef, and they were doing an $800 million clip. They fired Jobs, essentially, and put Scully in, and he took the company from $800 million to $8 billion, 10x. Scully stayed around. Scully has a couple of interviews. You can dig him up out there where he talks about this. He feels that he's been slighted because after Scully left, but he was kind of forced off by the board because he wasn't keeping up this torrid 10X pace. Yeah. And they said, I'm going to get somebody else. So they got rid of him and they put in, I guess, Spindler was the next guy. And Spindler was an insider, one of those guys that's in every company that's always trying to get the CEO fired so he can get the job. That's my take on it. And so Spindler managed to get the job. And Spindler was just not suited to be a CEO. He was apparently cowered under his desk a lot, and literally. And so I guess they got rid of him. There may have been somebody else I can't think of, but they finally finished off with this guy from National Semiconductor who was in a different industry completely. He couldn't do anything, and the company just was sliding so fast they had to bring Steve back. So Ellison's remembrance of history is skewed because, in fact, the company did better without Steve, and I think it can again, and I think it's going to follow the same pattern, which would be a fractal, which they're going to, this Tim Cook guy was trained by Steve, as was Scully, and I think he may do very well with the company, and I think Icahn might be right about this.
Well, here's what he says in the end. So Larry Ellison says, he says, Larry Ellison says, well, we saw it with Steve. Now we're going to out Steve and all this. So Charlie Rose says to him, so you're shorting Apple? Charlie Rose says it to Larry Ellison. He says, I'm not shorting Apple. I think I like Tim Cook. I mean, I think there are talented people there. But Steve is irreplaceable. But you just said to me that Apple is going down without Steve Jobs. Okay, I'll say it publicly. He's irreplaceable, blah, 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 blah. That's all.
So Rose is doing his own show now just to get stock tips?
I guess. I
mean, you going to short it? If you're going to short it, I'll short it.
Yeah.
Well, it's not the time to short it. At least until the phone. Now, here's the thing that I was thinking, because I was in this forum, and I suggested the following. It's possible that, and Ellison's not going to say to short anything on a public TV show. It's possible that Ellison, because he's always been so close to the company, has gotten a look at the new iPhone. And he thinks it's a turkey.
Maybe.
And if it's a turkey, then the stock will collapse. And Ellison will come out looking like,
Oh, yeah, because he can go either way right now.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm on Business Insider. I don't really go here that often.
Yeah.
It's littered with advertising.
Yeah.
I got stuff popping up everywhere.
Yeah. I try to
avoid it. I'm not going back to this. It's terrible. You know what really pisses me off? You know how they have a little advertisement that comes up and they have a little corner where the X is? And if you click that, little banner thingamajiggy goes away.
Yeah.
Right? I think there are – they know that people are going to click that spot, right? Especially on the touchscreens like the iPad. And they make the little area that is actually active somewhere different. So when you click it the first time, it opens up the new page.
There's a lot of possible scams you can do with those little pop-ups.
Yep. I think they do that because I try to hit it right on there and invariably it opens up the other page.
Anyway,
That's all I got.
Wrapping then. Okay. Well, we'll talk again next week, hopefully, next Tuesday.
I look forward to it. Yep. It's going to be great.
The 20th. And until then, adios.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.